You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi, everybody. You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion. We're on episode 14. My name is Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear, and I fucking hate punk rock MBA.
Wait, that was not part of our previous discussion at all. That came out of nowhere.
I just, just wanted everybody to know that Finn McKenty and punk rock MBA are fucking bullshit.
Awesome. We can elaborate more on that later. I'd love to hear it. I actually have never really watched his channel, so I have no information on him. I think you sent one time, and I watched like part of it.
He has the consistently worst fucking takes in punk rock, and I don't even know why he calls anything that he does punk rock. He just fucking sucks.
Yeah,
he did a really long video about fucking Goldfinger, so if that tells you anything.
We just did a punk movie review on the really bad non-punk rock Suburbia, so I don't know if we can talk right now.
Well, we didn't speak its praises, though.
That's true. We did not. In fact, if you want to listen to a full hour of us talking shit on Richard Linklater's 1996 flop Suburbia, then you can watch Punk Movie Review, or listen to it, rather. That's our other podcast, and you can find it in all the same spots you find this. So if you just want to listen to us bashing a Richard Linklater film about Gen X for about an hour, you can go listen to that. It's great.
That movie fucking sucks.
We have a guest this week, though, who we need to introduce.
We do. Yeah. Hey, just real quick, this is the 14th episode from the 14th Street Punks.
Hey-o.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so we dedicate this episode to anyone who ever lived on 14th Street in any of the punk houses. I think there were two punk houses in Lawrence, Kansas on 14th Street. So if you lived in either of those, this episode's dedicated to you.
Who's our guest?
I'm Joe.
Hi, Joe.
How's that work?
Yeah.
That was great.
Hi, how's it going?
That was good.
Thanks.
So how do we know you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I met you at other Nick's house, mm-hmm, not mm-hmm. Neckbone.
Right.
At some kind of party or something like that. And then I met Neckbone at a concert.
Was it at that church where you were playing a show?
No, I don't recall meeting you guys there, to be honest.
It was some super weird church just down the street from Boston Apartments.
I remember the show because I remember that there was a homeless man who was like, "Can you sing? Because I can sing." And he kept singing me "This Little Light of Mine" and cackling while he was doing
it. But did he sound good?
Yeah, he sounded like "This Little Light of Mine."
So he sounded like Tom Waits.
Kind of. Okay. A little
was
bit.
Was it Wesley fun, or was it Flatnose Kelly?
I have no idea who this person was.
Oh, okay. Do you know who Wesley or Flatnose Kelly was?
No, I don't think so.
Neckbone, do you remember them?
I remember Flatnose Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wesley was the old guy who murdered his wife and put her head in his windowsill.
Okay. Yeah, don't remember meeting him. Maybe it's better I don't remember meeting him.
That's the story he told me in Andy IY. I don't know.
Okay.
He told you he did that?
But he was really old. He was in his 70s. I think.
I'm guessing
or
he'd been
30s.
In prison for a while for that, probably.
Yeah, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
I might need Andy IY to clarify that story, but I'm pretty sure that's at least what he said.
Mm-hmm. He also could have just been lying.
Well, he was nutso, so.
Yeah.
It could have been a delusion, or it could have really happened. It's hard to say.
Yeah, it sounds probable. I also remember that show at the church that there was a guy who like was like a pastor or something like that who figured out what was going on like midway through the show, got super upset, got on stage and started talking about how Sid Vicious couldn't play bass and the real punk was Jesus and everybody left.
I mean, he's not wrong about Simon Ferocious, but I don't know about the rest of it.
Yeah. I wouldn't really know. I'm sure I've heard Sid Vicious play bass, but it's not been something I've been particularly interested in.
Well, I don't think on any of the recordings it was him playing bass. I think he only played, I use that term loosely, live. But he has so little to do with actual punk rock, it's really not even worth talking about.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too.
Yeah. Did he think that like he totally like owned you guys with that? Like oh, I destroyed their idol Sid Vicious, and everyone's like, nobody.
Absolutely.
Sid Vicious.
Absolutely. That was what he thought. He stood up to interrupt the show
totally
and talk
owned
about
you guys.
Yeah. He was one step away from having a backwards chair and a backwards hat and just rapping with us for a minute.
Rapping for Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Youth pastors in the 90s were such a thing.
I mean, I think they're still a thing.
I think they probably still are, yeah, but yeah. I don't know. I only interacted with them in the 90s.
Joe, the first time I remember meeting you, it's not necessarily the first time I actually did meet, it's just the first time I remember it, was actually at Boston Apartments. And for whatever reason, I thought you and Chris were in an argument. I don't know if you actually were, but that's how I read the situation. And I had known him for all of 5 seconds and decided he was one of my best friends in the entire world. So I didn't like that you were being mean to him. And I think I kicked you out of our apartment, if I remember right. So
yeah,
that's my recollection. Does that sound pretty accurate?
It sounds like it might be accurate. You might have kicked me out, but I didn't leave. So.
Oh, that's true. And I think I stopped caring after about 5 seconds and just went and got another 40.
Yeah.
Which was the style at the time.
I think that was the night that Brad puked in our tub also.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the same night. And
yeah.
I just remember there were a lot of Zimas there.
Ugh. That's probably why I didn't like people, because they brought Zimas to my apartment.
They brought a lot of Zimas.
Well, a lot of us were still underage. And so you just brought whatever you get your hands on, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Was that the same night as that show at the church?
I don't think so, but I don't recall. Maybe it was.
Because the first time I remember seeing you was at that show. And then I think you guys came over to my house to our apartment because it was so close. It was literally just down the street.
Maybe that was the same night
then. I think we were just like, come over to our place.
Mm-hmm. That might have been. And then, it could have been during a time period. So I knew Chris from high school. So I'd known him for a really long time. And I don't remember if we were living in the same house at that time period or if we would be shortly. Because I don't remember if I was still living in Kansas City or if I had already moved to Lawrence by that point.
I think you guys were still in Johnson County.
Yeah.
Kansas City.
I know it. Okay.
Yeah. I
know,
I think at least Chris was still in high school, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
That
Chris, I think, was still in high school when we moved to Lawrence.
Oh, yeah probably. He was a little bit younger than all of us.
I think Nick had just graduated right before we moved up.
All right. Yeah. So filling all the gaps, we played that show, and then we went back to your house. So we played that show. The band would have been Basement Disasters, and that would have been with Eric and his cousin Caleb and Brooke. And then possibly all of us went back to that show, and then the kids who went to high school with us would have been Chris and Brad, who I guess threw up in your bathtub, which you were not a fan of. But I think
I was not stoked on that.
I think going for a couple years, you know, after that in a couple of years, that's just par for the course for any given evening. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't really hold it against him at this point.
Yeah, you were just developing a taste for what would be to come. So, mm-hmm.
Well, it's not something that I hadn't already done.
Right.
But like,
me too. I'd already puked in our bathtub many times.
I was just like, unacceptable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
Offered no grace.
We're not on the you puke like in my bathtub part of our friendship yet. You that's jumped true. Way too many dates too far.
Yeah. Work up to that.
Okay. Yeah. Understood. Mostly strangers puking when, in my bathtub, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When did we stop being enemies?
Probably like the third or fourth time we hung out.
Because I feel like it was at a show at the Flanders house when you still wanted to beat me up.
It was, you guys became friends when I was living in St. Louis. Because I remember I came back from St. Louis and moved into the annex. And Jerbear, you said, hey, I'm going to invite Joe over and he's going to hang out. And I was like, you hang out with fucking Joe? Seriously?
That's how I and feel all so the time.
So at some point while I was in St. Louis, you guys had become friends and I was utterly shocked. I was like, what? But you know, then we became friends probably like a day or two after that. So,
so my recollection is that, see, this is why I'm wondering if I didn't already live in Lawrence, but at the house that I lived at in Lawrence with Chris. And I remember you guys being like, you can't come over if you want to fight our friend Chris. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not going to fight anybody. I think that maybe I had said that I was, though. I was like, oh, I'm going to beat up Chris or something like that.
Just so, for the fuck of it. Yeah. Just bored.
Yeah. It never happened. So mm-hmm. I remember that you, Jer, were at our house on our porch talking about how you were going to do something to Brad. Like you were like, that guy, he puked in my bathtub. I'm going to kill him later or something like that. I don't remember totally, what exactly what it was, but
totally reasonable response.
But you were being,
I mean, I don't think
mean.
I was that violent, but yeah,
no, probably. You were like sitting in a chair, like talking, uh-huh. But you were being pretty mean. And I was like, you can't say that to my friend. And so I got a 40 and walked around the porch or the house or some way in which I was standing behind you, and then came up behind mm-hmm. you with a 40 and went to hit you in the back of the head with a 40, but no longer had it because someone had just...
I remember hearing about that.
Nick
now.
Had just taken it out of my hand as I was walking around. Mm-hmm.
I vaguely remember that. Was that at the Simpsons house? Did you live at the Simpsons house?
I never lived at the Simpsons house.
Okay.
I lived at the Flanders house, which was
I know that.
Next door to the Simpsons house.
Hence the name.
Right. No, I remember that. Because I feel like that night was maybe at the Simpsons house. Not at the Flanders house, but maybe it was the Flanders house. I don't know.
I think that the Simpsons house didn't have a front porch like that.
Oh.
Yeah, the Simpsons house was more like a bungalow style house, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember then.
But anyway, then since we never actually fought, we got along.
Nice.
I think it might have involved at some point having a conversation sober. That might have done it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could do it.
So, for Nick, I remember specifically coming up to me at a show and being like, hey man, how's it going? I was like, oh hey. And he's like, hey, you want to buy me a beer? And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll buy you a beer. And then I bought you a beer and you were like, haha, got you, fuck you asshole, and ran off. And I was like, okay.
Really got you that time.
Yeah, so you owe me a beer.
Okay, all right. I will get you a beer when I get back to Chicago. Okay.
Sweet.
I am on my trip to I guess I'm not a prairie punk for this episode. I'm a Puget Sound punk because I am in Washington State.
Ugh.
Yeah. So
sorry to hear that.
Just for this episode, I'm a Puget Sound punk, if that's a thing. Maybe we can get some more audience if we try to include them for at least one episode.
Joe, Johnny and I seem to both have memory problems with the Against Me show. Can you fill gaps on that? Do you remember that? Because it was your house.
Yeah, I remember that for sure. I remember that Against Me played at the Flanders house. And I don't remember. I mean, there's a video of it, like you can see it on YouTube.
Yeah, and there's no one playing on a bucket. That's a proper drum kit.
So then that must be the second show there.
So everybody told me there was only one show.
I'm pretty sure there were three Against Me shows.
Oh damn, mixing it up.
So
<That's> now so there's crazy. Three
because. Because I thought there were two. They Johnny definitely said there was only one.
So Against Me definitely played at the Flanders house with buckets at one point. And then I think they played a second show with a proper drum set. And then the video
has a proper drum kit.
Yeah. So they played a bucket show at one point.
Okay. And I remember both of them. I think then they that played, sounds right.
They played a drum show at the Flanders house, and then they played a third show at the Rainbow House. And by the third show, they had an actual album, like a professionally or like a much better quality album.
That's the Rainbow House show was the only one I actually saw. I didn't see the Flanders ones. I think that was when I was in St. Louis or something.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I know at the first Flanders show, they just had like a demo tape.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And then they had like a vinyl at the next one. At the Rainbow show by that time, yeah.
Yeah, that was when Reinventing Axl Rose came out.
Right, thank you for saying the name because I kept wanting to say Pints of Venice Makes Me Stronger album.
That was 2003. Probably. Mm-hmm. So I was already back here. So I know I didn't see.
Yeah. That was definitely during the Rainbow era.
But I remember the bucket show a little bit, but the video is a proper drum kit.
Yes.
For sure.
I'm pretty sure they played at the Flanders house twice.
I thought so too, but everybody told me no. So I'm glad that you're here to back me up.
Yeah. We have an actual Flanders here. So.
Yes, my recollection is that everyone was excited for the second time and no one knew who they were the first time.
Right. What about the State of Fear show?
Ooh, that was a good show. So the State of Fear show was kind of a mess in a lot of ways. I think everybody was really excited for that because State of Fear would have been, you know, that was S-tier punk band to get to come and play at your house.
Fuck yeah.
At least in my mind. And
yeah. They'd been broken up for a while too, so it was kind of like a reunion tour, wasn't it?
That I don't recall.
Is that right? Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't recall, but I know State of Fear was one of my favorites, and it's still pretty good stuff, and everybody liked it. So they played, and we made a real big deal about it, and I think we were trying to charge like $3 or $4 at the door or something like that. And everybody came running in. Like nobody would stand at the door to collect money. So I remember that we were like they played the show and then we were like, here's $15, and they were like, you gotta be kidding.
Oh no.
So I remember other Joe went around and took up and collected money for him.
Oh, that's good. I think I remember that actually. I think I paid like later in the night.
Yeah, but like there were a lot of people.
Played with them?
Ooh, Shitlist?
Okay, yeah, that sounds right.
There were a lot of people who showed up from out of town, I think, as well.
Uh-huh.
And then after the show, everything just kind of devolved into a complete and utter mess of drunken people kind of rolling around on the floor. I think
that night was wild.
Yeah, somebody broke a window.
Uh-huh.
And then I think somebody was like, it's too hot in here, and they just smashed out the rest of the window.
Jesus Christ.
And then somebody got all stupid drunk and threw up in the living room. And then some, somebody else was like, dude, that's hummus. And they were like, that's hummus?
No.
No.
Yeah. And some guy, and we, some guy like picked up a big chunk of broken glass and was like, I'm going to eat this hummus. And I was like, dude, that's vomit. And that's broken glass. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, God.
And I just remember that was the one time where I was like, boy, I wish I could leave this house. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning. There's
too
people.
Bad it's your fucking house.
Yeah, yeah. So,
One thing I remember you telling me, and I know we mentioned this, but I couldn't remember it very well. Didn't you say that the wall in your bedroom collapsed or something?
Yeah. Yeah, that happened. I don't remember exactly. I like the window and part of the wall fell off. That house was pretty trashed by the time we left. So
yeah,
the
y'all did a good job.
The upstairs toilet was clogged with glass.
Good Lord!
Like there was just piles of broken glass in the upstairs toilet. So we locked the door from the inside and crawled out the window so that no one would go in there and use it. But then at a show, somebody went in there and used it anyway.
How? Broke the door down?
Maybe. I don't know. So that wasn't good at all. So we had to lock the door from the inside again so that no one could go into the room because it was too disgusting. I remember we tried to get out of the lease at that place. But none of us knew exactly what was involved in that. So we went to the landlord's office and was like, hey, man, can we sublease? And he was like, I suppose so. And I was like, cool. I see here it's like a $200 fee. And he's like, yeah. Like, so I just give you that and I'm out of the lease? And he was like, no, you need somebody to sublease. And I was like, I don't know what that means.
Kids are so dumb.
Yeah. I mean, none of us had ever lived in a house before. Like,
right.
Yeah,
no, I know. It's also when you rent to like, you know, a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-olds, I mean, you can't expect that they're going to take the best care of your house probably.
Yeah. I would probably push back on that 18, 19, 20-year-old and be like 16, 17, 18-year-olds. I think.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
Some of y'all were pretty young.
How many of you were actually on the lease?
I don't know.
Okay. Which kind of brings me to my next topic, jumping ahead. Speaking of bathrooms that don't work and not being entirely sure who's on the lease, I want to bring up the Central House, the second Central House, the one where we lived in Kansas City, Missouri, in Westport. Jer Bear and I talked about it on the last episode. We kind of left off where... I had moved in, and I don't remember. Somebody had invited me to move in there because there was an extra room. I think it was you. And I was sick of living by myself, and so I moved in. And that place was already trashed when I moved in. But you were there from what I understand. You were there from the beginning to pretty much the very end.
Yeah, I think that was the case. I'm pretty sure I was there in the beginning. I mean, I know that I had one of the rooms in the beginning, and I lived in that room the whole time that we had that house. And I know I was there till the end because I remember Eric calling up and right when we were moving out, like the day we were moving out, he called and he was like, hey, I'm getting on a plane right now and I'm heading back to Kansas from Hawaii. Can I move in? And I was like, no, dude, we're all moving out today. And he was like, oh, well, I don't know what I'm going to do then. And I was like, I don't know either. you should have figured something out before you decided you were just moving into my house. But okay.
Yeah. From the airport. Calling from the airport.
Yes. Yes. So we lived in that house for a while. I'm not exactly sure how long, but it was right near the Westport area of Kansas City, which would have been where all the kind of clubs were. And I remember working, you guys were talking about whether or not there was a bar called Kelly's in Kansas City. I worked in the pizza shop that sold slices into Kelly's.
Nice.
and also into the street, and there was like a big like America's pub, like, and a country western pub, and they were on one side of the road, and then there was like the more hip hop club on the other side of the road, and the cops would build barricades between the two in the summer, at nights on like Friday and Saturday nights, because otherwise there would be like fist fights and riots between the two. Not that there weren't anyway. I remember getting out of work at like 3 or 4 in the morning from the pizza shop, and everything just smelled like pepper spray, and it was hard to breathe. And there were cops with like backpacks of pepper spray who would go through. And then we were a couple blocks off of that, and there was a club called XO, I think, right at the end of the block.
Yep.
And so we'd sit and drink on the porch. And even like in the middle of the winter, there would be people trying to parallel park on our street who couldn't parallel park the cars, like driving in from Johnson County and stuff like that to go to the club, and showing up in, you know, like the most ridiculous, inappropriate outfits for the weather, trying not to slip on the ice. And I remember at one point somebody had like ran out of the club and jumped the fence that was across the street from our house, because there was like a big industrial lot or something like that across from the house. And I remember a cop chasing him and jumping up and getting stuck like midway, like his waist, his feet were dangling, and his body was over on the other side of the fence, and he was like kicking his legs and waving his arms. And Ray walked off the porch and walked up to him and was like, "Hey, you stuck there? You need a hand?" Like, and then just turned around and walked off.
I completely forgot about Club XO, but yeah, it was like,
I remember that club
almost now. Across the street. It was like just catty corner from us, like almost across the street. And I don't remember the specifics of it, but there were these guys who pulled up in a sports car. They parked like almost right in front of our house, and we were all on the porch. And he came up, or these two guys came up, and they were like popped collar bros, like just, you know, finance bros or something like that. And they came up and started hitting on, I don't know who they were hitting on. I don't remember. But they were hitting on one of the punk girls who was hanging out, and they're like, "Hey, you want to come to the club with us?" And she was like, "No, I'm not even old enough to get in anyway." And one of them handed her the keys to his car and was like, "Why don't you watch that thing for me? We're going to go in real quick and party a little bit, and then we'll come back out and get you." And they went in, and she got in the car and did a joyride. Do you remember that?
I remember hearing about it. Who was that?
I don't know. I don't think she, I think she was like just traveling through. Like, I don't think she like lived there or anything. Like, she was one of the travelers that like Ray brought around. So Ray would bring random travelers home. And I think she was one of those. And she was like, "I'm going to go on a joyride." And a couple other people hopped in the car too. And they like sped, like that car went from 0 to 60 before they even got to Westport. Like, it's just like, holy shit. I don't know where they parked the car, but it was not where they, where those guys had parked it. They parked it somewhere else entirely. I think they parked it like in, like in a bad neighborhood. Not that our neighborhood was great.
Yeah, but you'd have to go a long way to find a bad neighborhood from there.
But I remember when they came back, they walked back. And I was like, "Where's the car?" And they're like, "I don't know. I don't know the city well enough to know that."
Yeah, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
To give a stranger your keys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
There were a lot of people in and out of that house. And I don't think we ever locked the doors. And we lived in a pretty rough neighborhood. And occasionally people would just come in.
Right. I didn't even have keys to the house. I had no keys to that house. Like, I'm not sure if anyone did. I just on faith knew that the house would be unlocked anytime I needed to come home. And I was like, I wonder what would happen if I showed up and it was just locked. I'd probably just break a window or something. Like, at that point.
Yeah, I think that would have been fine. So that house was an interesting arrangement. So when you walked up, there were like these stairs that you could walk into, and there was a front porch that kind of did a little L curve around the house. And so there was a large front porch in front, or relatively large, and then there was a little one where there was a door that would have been to your left and a door that would have been straight forward to get into the house. There were two front doors. and one of them had a board nailed across it so you couldn't get in. So it looked like a boarded up house from the street, but then the door on the left you could get in, because it was never locked the entire time we lived there. And then there was like a basement that you could get into from the back, and you could see that someone was using a
more of a cellar than a basement. It was for like tornadoes mostly.
It was just full of like broken stuff.
Yeah. And did you ever see the there was just a like a regular, you know, like a car jack, like when you like have to change your tire. There was just one of those that was holding up the foundation of the house. I don't know if you ever noticed that.
The kitchen, the subfloor of the kitchen was held up by a car jack.
Yeah.
That somebody had put into place. And we had shows.
That sounds completely safe.
It was totally safe. There was a board that was just hanging by copper wire. Like there was like electrical wire that was just normal electrical wiring for a house that probably should have been inside the walls, but whatever ceiling there was to that cellar area had collapsed, and there was a board that was hanging from the wire and it was holding the wire down. I was like, oh, that can't be safe. And then also the upstairs toilet stopped working at that house, which I believe was the only toilet.
That was the only bathroom. Yeah. So I would just, if I had to piss, I'd just go in the backyard. Super easy. But like, if you got to take a shit, like you better hope that your job is close enough to get there, which ours were, thankfully.
I remember that we called the landlord and we're like, the toilet isn't working. And they were like, oh, well, just find our plumber. And I was like, I don't know who your plumber is. And the landlord was out of state, right? And she was like, well, just get the yellow pages and flip through them and find the plumber. His name was like Josh, or maybe it was like John or Joe, so just call that really, guy.
Yeah, he had like some super common name. Just call John.
Just look up a plumber named Joe.
And I was like, do you like, okay, are you gonna like pay this person or do we refer them? And they're like, no, if you find the right plumber, they know me. So they'll take care of it. And
fucking hell.
And it wasn't like there was a common name. It was like she was like, it was like Josh or John or Joe or Jacob or something like that. Just call all the plumbers. And then you find the right one and he knows me. So we got my mom's boyfriend to come over and tear out the ceiling to try and fix the toilet from underneath. And he did it and he found the pipe and he was like, oh, I don't have the tools to fix this pipe. And so we just were missing chunks of ceiling and the toilet didn't work.
Like, we didn't have a functioning bathroom for, it was a long time. And we lived there for, what, like 2 years, probably?
If 2 years, or I don't know how long we lived there.
It seemed like it was about 2 years, yeah. Because
I think it was a random period of time. I don't think it was a set number of years.
But we solidly didn't have a bathroom for at least 6 months of that. Yeah.
I can't believe we paid any money at all to live in that house.
Honest. I don't remember what the rent. Well, I remember I paid. It was less than $200 was my part of rent.
Yeah, but you had the big
even when
room.
I inherited the big room when Nick moved out and I got the big room, it was still less than $200.
I remember that my rent was $147.50 every month.
Okay, I think I paid like $180 for the big room or something like that.
No, it was pretty good. You can work at a pizza shop and feel like you've got it made.
Yeah.
Work at a pizza shop, go to AC's and buy 50-cent PBRs after work, and then...
Yeah, but Buzzard Beach too, 50-cent PBRs.
Yeah.
Work at a video store for 30 hours a week and then deliver pizzas for another 10 hours a week, and like you're good, man.
Just rich. Go back to a house that was basically open to the public.
It's like half a step above living in a squat.
Yeah. It was basically, yeah, we were, it was a squat that we were paying for, is all it was.
I mean, I'm pretty sure it was by the end. I think we stopped paying for the last few months we lived there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You guys all moved to Lawrence after that. I moved in with Stein while I went to UMKC because he had an extra room. And then. I decided to transfer to KU. I don't remember why. I think I just missed Lawrence. And then I moved out there and moved in with you guys on 19th Street, which was not a great house, but it had a functioning bathroom. So that was a big plus for me.
I that was a big step in the nice direction for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was I really was a grown up, mature man living in a house that had working all the things.
I do remember we were responsible at the 19th Street house. We were responsible for mowing the lawn, and we didn't have a lawnmower, but we had this old weed whacker that was just came with the house, I guess. So I ended up weed whacking the entire yard one time. It took me like 3 hours. It was a really nice. Long and painful process.
That sounds, I appreciate that. That's very nice of you.
Did it exactly one time. I was like, well, fuck, I'm never doing that again. Let me just stop mowing the lawn again.
I don't recall how the lawn got mowed.
I don't think it did most of the time. We just had just wild grass. Yeah, but it was still better. The central house was still just, I think the central house was probably the worst place I've ever lived that I've paid to live at.
There were all kinds of people in and out of the central house who stayed there for a while or just crashed there for a while, or like people like their boyfriends or girlfriends or whoever would move in for a while and just kind of live there. And definitely there were people who like we'd meet at Food Not Bombs and then just be like, all right, well, you live with us now.
Right. Like, you seem cool. You need a place to crash? Yeah, come on over. Our house is literally never locked.
Yeah. We had like, I remember that Brad, who we'd mentioned earlier, came to a party at the house, and he brought Christy with him, and then she just lived there from then on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that.
I'm pretty sure that's what happened. He just brought her to our house for a party, and she just stayed for like a year or something like that.
Something like that. She was there a long time.
Yeah.
It took me a while. I remember it took me like a solid month to realize like, oh, Christy's just one of my roommates now, I guess. Like, I was like, that's weird. She hasn't gone home in like a month. Oh, she fucking lives here. All right, whatever.
I definitely remember you talking about waiting at, what's the other bar that we went
Newsroom?
To? Waiting at the newsroom. You were like, I was waiting for somebody at the newsroom. And I was like, if you were waiting at the newsroom, it was for Christy. That's for sure.
Yeah. She for whatever reason, she had like 3 shirts. They were all dirty punk rock shirts, and she would sit there and like she'd walk out of the room wearing one, and she'd be like, "Ah, fuck, I gotta go change." She'd go change to one of her other dirty punk rock shirts. Like, I have never seen somebody rotate through 3 shirts that many times in like 10 minutes, and I'm like, they all look the same. They're all black and white, dirty punk rock shirts. It doesn't matter. Let's fucking go.
We're going to the newsroom.
Right. We're going to the same bar we go to every fucking night. We're going to hang out with the same people we live with.
At the bar that we're going to go hang out to, that we're going to walk to, and then we're going to go to Chubby's afterwards. Were you at Chubby's when it got when drive-by shot up?
No, I heard about it. I wasn't there that time.
So just as an example of the kind of situation we were in, we would go there to the newsroom, get all drunk, and then go to Chubby's, and I remember, which was a 24-hour diner, and I remember Chubby's got shot at, like somebody drove past and shot at it. And when that happened, Ray got up and ran over to a table because everyone was diving under the tables, and he got up and ran over to a table and stole their fries because he didn't have any.
I don't remember who was with me, but I got their veggie burger. And it was like a in-house made veggie burger, and it was rice and gray stuff mushed together into a patty, and it wasn't even solid. And like I ate part of it, and I was like, we were done, and I was like, the server came over and he's like, how is everything? I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever had in my mouth. I'm not paying for it. And he was like, He was like, well, let me get the manager. I was like, get whoever the fuck you want, but I'm not paying for it.
Yeah.
I think that just is
that, that, of course, was before I had the cigarette butt omelet.
Of course, which is now the worst thing that you've eaten.
Yeah.
I've had worse. That's just what a veggie burger was in Kansas and Missouri for most of the 90s and early aughts.
I was lucky. I was one of the few people in the group that was not a vegetarian, so I didn't have to endure. I did every once in a while get one just to see what y'all were eating, but yeah, I remember all the veggie burgers at diners just looking like just slop on a bun. They just looked awful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, which is honestly why I just didn't want to be a vegetarian, because I kept looking at your options and I was like, nah, that's, my God, that's awful. I can't fucking eat that.
That's why everybody loved Genghis Khan so much.
Yeah.
True fact.
And yeah, also, I hear it's
it was
back.
Really good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I would eat there if I were not hundreds of miles away. So we at the Central House had three girls that we met at Food Not Bombs move in. Charisse ended up living with us in Lawrence too afterwards.
Yeah, she did.
Mm-hmm. But that was pretty cool. Like, just there were people in and out of there all the time. There was this guy James who would just come in. I mean, there were sometimes people we didn't even know that would just like walk in and be like, hey, what's going on?
Like, hey, like, whose friend is did somebody invite this person?
but James, I can't remember if we met James at Food Not Bomb.
Yes.
Or if we met James.
That's where I
break dancing.
Oh, I met him breakdancing at Food Not Bombs. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, both for me.
So both.
Yeah.
So, well, I think maybe like somebody else knew James, like maybe Laszlo knew James or something.
Probably.
Like that.
I mean, he was like a guy around Midtown and had been for a while. So I think lots of
Laszlo,
people like, knew him.
No,
Laszlo, fill our gaps.
Yeah. step up and let us know how we all met James. But that's the first time I remember seeing him was at Food Not Bombs, breakdancing. And he started just, coming over to the Central House. And I remember one morning I came down. It was super early in the morning, so probably like 9 or 10 a.m. for me at that point, which I thought was super early at the time. And he was just sitting in the living room by himself, just watching porn, like fully clothed, thankfully, but just watching porn and just going, damn, damn, and like just screaming damn at everything that was happening. Like, just like, Jesus Christ, dude, what the fuck are you doing? He was like, I needed to bring this over because I don't have a VCR at my house.
Well, so I distinctly remember James waking me up, like screaming at the TV at 9 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I went downstairs and I was like, hey man, how's it going? And he was like, I just got Aladdin. And I was like, I mean, that's cool, but like, why are you watching Aladdin at my house at 9 in the morning? He was like, all right. So I was real broke, so I went and I pawned my VCR. But when I was there at the pawn shop, I saw a new copy of Aladdin. So I sold my VCR and bought Aladdin. And I was like, you sold your VCR and bought a video cassette tape with the money. And he was like, yeah, but it's Aladdin. Okay, man.
He also had written an autobiography that was, I think, 20 pages long. And at least 3 of those pages were just about the time he met Chuck D.
Did he really meet Chuck D, though?
That's a fucking good question.
I assume so.
Don't know how much of this autobiography was accurate, but he'd made copies of it, and he was trying to sell them at one of the shows.
Yeah, he was a fun guy, though. He was super energetic.
Yeah. He was always positive.
Always positive.
Sounds entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, he lived pretty close to us.
He lived in like a studio apartment on like Broadway and like 39th, I want to say.
I remember at one point we brought over, or somehow just ended up like this guy at our house who we all called Toothless Canadian Dave. And he kept, he like came over and we were all sitting around a big dining room table playing cards or something like that. We used to play a lot of cards and a lot of dice. And I think at one point we got a foosball table and we played that a lot.
We did. It took up almost our entire dining room.
Yeah. We had that. And then we also had computer at one point. Yeah. And that was just a fight. It was like a 24-hour fight to see who could... What's that?
That sounds like something you guys would fight about.
Oh, yeah. Man. Because people would be like, well, I get the computer after you. Well, I get the computer after you. And if it were like 2 a.m. when someone got off, they'd be like, my turn, and run downstairs. Like, so it was 24 hours, nonstop, 24 hours every single day of like, boom, headshot. Like, you'd be trying to sleep and you'd be like, hey man, I have to be at work in the morning. And they'd be like, sorry, it's my turn for the computer. Boom, headshot. Like, but I remember Toothless Canadian Dave came over and he was just like, he was like a traveling guy and he was just kept trying to tell us racist jokes. And he kept being like, you guys, I know so many good racist jokes. And we were like, we don't like you. And I remember he was like, well, I think I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to blow the city. I'm just going to try and like, how do I get to Lawrence? I heard Lawrence is cool. How do I get to Lawrence? And I was like, I don't know, man. And he's like, well, where is the good spot to hitchhike to Lawrence? And I was like, I'll give you a ride. And then I got him in my car and I dropped him off in front of the Nation of Islam church.
In KCK.
Yeah. I was like, good luck, man. You can hitch a ride here.
Jokes over here. See how that works out.
Yeah, let's have fun. I don't know where we met these people. I think usually it was Food Not Bombs, but it doesn't seem like he was a Food Not Bombs crowd kind of person.
No, but he was traveling and it was free food. So, you know, that unfortunately you get like all kinds of people when there's free food involved. So,
yeah, I think the Central House kind of represented a change in direction, with less bands and more partying. And I think there was kind of a bitter feeling about some of the political activism that had been more predominant in Lawrence and how either ineffective it had been or how difficult it had been to work with some of the groups of people that we were involved in. I remember doing things like, I remember you and I going to like Wobblies meetings and stuff like that. And protests on the plaza and other things like that. And also like that would have been right around the time of the George Bush Iraq war.
Post 9/11.
That was just post 9/11. And there was kind of a stronger sense of like not really trying to move to improve society, but just kind of moving to be outside of society in a way that didn't really work. So I feel like it was more antisocial than any of the places that we lived in Lawrence because it was less political activism and more just like, screw the whole thing. We're outside of your society.
Yeah.
So
it did feel, Jerry Bear, I know that we talked about this in previous episodes. I somehow drank harder and felt like I was more destructive when I moved back to Kansas City than I had been in Lawrence, even living with you. And I don't know if because you had gotten so out of control that I felt like I had to like kind of, you know, hold myself back and maybe like stay a little bit coherent to help protect you. And then when you were gone, it was just like, okay, well now I can just kind of go nuts. Or if it was just because it was that darker time. But yeah, I went way harder into drinking and just self-destruction. If I had not had a job that started at 4 PM, I don't know how I would have held on to a job at all.
Yeah. I mean, that whole time was very nihilistic. I think not just for me, it sounds like, but for y'all too. And it was very much like moving away from activism and towards nihilism and like, I don't want any part of this. I'm just going to get fucked up. And
when I moved back to Kansas City, and maybe why it got a little darker was because, yeah, before that, previously in Lawrence and before that, and even back in high school when I was less political, I just thought, oh, the system's broken and we just need to fix it. But coming to that realization of like, no, it's actually functioning the way it's supposed to. And the world's just horrible. Like, and that's, I think, how that kind of led me down a darker path when I started to realize that that was the case.
Yeah, well, Kansas City is also just a darker place than Lawrence in a lot of ways. I mean, Lawrence, it functionally wasn't the real world, you know?
I mean, that's true.
The way things would happen, you know, I remember, not me, but the fake me that for legal reasons is distinct from me, doing things in Lawrence, the character of me that is in the story now, doing things in Lawrence that just like, just completely getting away with whatever kind of crazy thing, but also like, we did things like the Reclaim the Streets, where nobody who's real rented like trucks and filled them full of couches and blockaded off the streets and, you know, was like, we're going to protest the Gap, and doing things like, you know, sealing bank doors shut and sign drops. And there, I remember this fake character remembers that there was critical masses where the cops would try and arrest people, and people would be unarrested just by the crowd of people surrounding the cops. And then in Kansas City, you've got, you know, things like, I remember going to a party in Kansas City and drinking and finding like a rocking horse on the side of the road, like with somebody's trash where they'd put their trash out. And I was like, oh, great. I'm going to take this because it's awesome. And it's, we had that for a long time at the Central House. We had all kinds of weird stuff there.
We had the battle frog.
We had the battle frog, which bears some description. And I used to ride a battle frog with a battle axe around the house, which was like a piece of playground equipment on like a big spring that you could bounce around on. And the battle axe was just a firefighter's axe that I would just wave around above my head.
Drunk, waving an axe around.
Safety guaranteed. but I was walking with this rocking horse, and I got to like Main Street, and I just saw all these cops, and I looked around, and there must have been a dozen cops there. And I'm holding this rocking horse, pretty drunk, and these cops are all just looking at me, and then they all look at the dead body laying in the middle of the street. I'm like, all right, good evening, officers, and just walk off. Like, there were drive-bys, and, you know.
Yeah, Kansas City was rough.
Somebody got shot across the street from the Central House and died there, and yeah, Kansas City was pretty rough. Oh, I had lived near, there used to be a venue called the Fuse Box, and I'd lived near where that was, and on the block that I lived on, there were people who were not the police who would patrol with guns, and there would be, you know, sex workers out on the street corners, and I could hear gunshots, like, almost every single night, and I kind of wonder, like, I mean, there was definitely like a level of violence and a level of poverty that you didn't see in a town that was almost exclusively college students.
Right.
Oh, that's for sure. And there was also like, I mean, as men at least, there was a level of safety in Lawrence that didn't exist in Kansas City. Now, I know that particularly in South Park, women would get assaulted in there late at night walking home. So I mean, I can't say that Lawrence was safe, but for white dudes, it was really safe.
Like walking back from La Familia after work and even stopping and drinking and then walking back home by myself, other than like, if you saw like a big truck with rednecks, then maybe just cut down the next street. But other than that, like,
yeah,
you were going to be fine.
Lawrence was fucking rednecks,
right?
For us.
But and also like even the cops in Lawrence, like, I'm not saying that they never harassed people. I mean, we've definitely got stories. Like, I mean, even I got hit with a intoxicated in public ticket, open container, and all that shit. But like in Lawrence, it mostly got played off as, you know, the cops being like, "Ugh, you annoying little scamps. Oh, you've done it again."
Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever go to shows at the Next Space?
Yes.
No. Mm-hmm.
It was like Cherry, like 18th and Cherry or 13th yeah. and Cherry.
I went with you. You took me there.
Yeah, there would be bands that would play there too, and that was the kind of area where there was just not a lot of people around, just kind of empty area. I mean, but there were people who lived by there. But I know that right next to that area, there were like three or four people who got hit by buses because the buses would just gun it through there at like 50 miles an hour.
Because they're afraid or what?
I mean, there just wasn't a lot of people or anything like that. I remember that at a certain point there would be like,
it's pretty fucked up.
Certain parts of town where there were like dogs roaming around and stuff like that.
So, I remember hearing about that shit too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I do. I remember the dogs because I remember when I finally did see the Penelope Spheris Suburbia and they had the wild dogs. I was like, oh, that's like Kansas City.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff with that.
Yeah.
So. But it's all different now, is my understanding.
Yeah, yes. It seems pretty nice when I've visited.
It's all... I have not been to any of the new stuff in Kansas City. I've still never been to Power and Light. I haven't really been downtown or to the River Market or to anywhere where the little, like, the tram system that they built goes. I mean, I don't really know anyone who lives around there anymore, so just I haven't had a reason to go in the couple of times I've visited over the last decade. So
we went up over right after the 4th of July. We took our kids up and we went to Worlds of Fun and Oceans of Fun. That was my first time being there. I lived there for years and never went there.
One of the things that would happen in Kansas City is that it would get freezing cold at night but warm up during the day, and so in certain times of the winter it would rain all day and then it would freeze at night and you'd get a thin layer of ice over everything.
Yeah.
And then that ice would start to thaw the next day and you'd get like mud, and then it would rain again and you'd get ice over mud and it would be like this disgusting sludge. And it was Jeff's birthday and it was a sleet storm and everything was covered in ice.
Yes.
Yeah. And Jeff was like, yeah, we're gonna hang out and drink for my birthday, and he had like a case of beer or something like that, and he came over to our house and we decided to sit around and drink a case of beer, and by we I mean the fictional character versions of us,
right?
Because Jamie decided that was not good enough for Jeff's birthday. He needed to go to a strip club.
Oh, I remember this story.
And we were all like, nah, we don't really want to go to a strip club.
Yeah,
and
it's not really our scene. Like,
no, it's his birthday. He has to go to a strip club. And we were like, I'm not into this idea. But she convinced us. And we were like, well, we're all pretty drunk, so we shouldn't drive to a strip club, you know. And so she got somebody to come over and drive us to a strip club. And so this person that none of us knew, well, I mean, Jamie knew, but I didn't know, and Jeff didn't know, and Nick, you didn't know, but we all got into a car with this girl who had a loaf of pumpkin bread in the back of her car. Yes. And so we called her Pumpkin Bread Girl.
Yeah.
And
we ate that entire loaf of pumpkin bread, too.
We sat in the back of the car eating pumpkin bread as she drove us through a sleet storm on a layer of ice that turned into, like, a pretty nasty snowstorm. And she drove us around Kansas City, and I'm pretty sure we were all drinking beers in the back of the car and stuff like that.
We absolutely were drinking during the trip, 100%, yeah.
Yes, and then... she drove us to a strip club, and I remember everybody got into the strip club, but they like stopped me and they were like, wait a minute, where's your ID? Like, they were giving me a hard time and stuff like that. And I got in, and like, you guys all got like drinks and stuff like that, and it took me forever to get a drink. And I went up to the table and I was like, man, they really gave me a hard time. Did anybody else get a hard time going in? And Pumpkin Bread Girl was like, not me, and I'm not even 18. And I was like, what is going on?
Yeah. How did you get into punk rock? And how old were you when you really discovered it?
I believe that I got into punk rock through the Dead Kennedys, which was something that a friend of mine, my friend Dave, was like, you'll probably like this. And he gave me a Dead Kennedys CD and a NoFX CD. And I really liked the Dead Kennedys for years and years and years. I was a big fan. And I listened to Jello Biafra's Spoken Word and everything they made, all that stuff. So,
who was in your scene when you got into punk? Like, was it Nick and Chris and Ray and all them, or who were your comrades?
So I was definitely into punk when I was in high school, probably, you know, 14, 15, 16, something like that. I would hang out with probably some people that you don't know. My friend Dave.
I think the only one left really is Filth or Blatz.
I'm pretty sure Filth is just the correct answer.
So Mike,
when's the last
the
time you listened
one?
To the Shit Split?
What's that?
To when's the last time I listened?
Yeah, when's the last time you listened to the
Really
Shit Split?
It really depends. When's the last time I listened to like the whole Shit Split? Or when's the last time I listened to Filth? Because I couldn't tell you when the last time I listened to Blatz was.
Really? Maybe you should give it a listen again. When's the last time you listened to the Filth side?
I would say that I've listened to Filth within the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe more recently than that. I like Filth. I would say I don't know that I'd go through and listen to a whole side as much as like I have Filth on some playlists that I listen to. For that sure. kind of thing. So,
well, you know, maybe just give Blatz another listen.
Okay. Yeah. I promise you I will give Blatz another listen just for you.
All right. And I will admit that I can appreciate the Filth side more now than I think I did back in the day. Still prefer the Blatz side, sentimental reasons, and just like it better. And I appreciate that so far. I think Mike is the only one to agree with me on the Blatz side. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I now am fully on the Blatz side. I like the Shit Split all around, but if I had to choose a side, it's probably the Blatz side.
But wait a minute. Are you guys like, are you both on the Logical Nonsense side, or is one of you Grumple?
Oh, fuck, man.
Oh, that's tough.
That's a harder question.
That's a hard question.
So, Logical Nonsense, are you just talking about their split?
Yeah, obviously. Well,
or their oeuvre. Oeuvre. I don't know. However you pronounce that word.
Oeuvre? That's the part of the egg that...
No. Their entire catalog. Because Logical Nonsense has a lot more music out there.
Right.
So that split, I'll probably have to go with Logical Nonsense on that split.
That's tough.
But
I would have
I do
to say
love
that...
me some Grimple Up Your Ass.
Yeah,
I would have to say that Grimple's better stuff is not on the split.
Agreed.
That's fair enough. Okay, yeah, if we're talking about just the split, then I'll go with Logical Nonsense.
I'm glad
but,
that
we can
agree, decide that.
Agree on the fact that Grimple Up Your Ass will always have a place in my heart.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I like Grimple.
That's such a good record.
Yeah.
and like comparing Grimple Up Your Ass to Logical Nonsense is apples and oranges, because mm-hmm. Grimple Up Your Ass is a pop punk record for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't think Logical Nonsense is pop punk?
I guess if you want to define pop punk any way that you want to, then sure.
You know, when you got a guitar and a drums. I don't have any artistic projects that I would like to publicly promote. So mm-hmm. sure. I don't know if you have other general questions. Like, I'm living my life.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you want to collaborate with Chicago. Us on our 50 Shades of Gary script that we're writing?
Sure. Okay, absolutely. Cool. I'm great at writing movie scripts.
Whenever we get started with it, I'll make sure that I'll make us all a Google Doc.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but then you guys have to help me on my movie idea.
Oh, what's your movie
idea? Which is what?
My movie idea is about a family of big feet that decide.
That's already a movie.
The heat is on, like the heat is on and they're in trouble. And so they transmorph themselves into humans, which is something that these big feet can just do. And they take over as sheriff of a town. But then as sheriff of the town, they keep getting calls about the big feet activity that they themselves are doing. Mm-hmm. And so they're living a double life, trying to hide as big feet, but also trying to capture themselves as big feet.
Yeah.
And we play it up for laughs at every chance we get.
Of course. Can you tell me the heat that is on, from where does that heat come?
Well, like, people spot Bigfoot prints and they call, and the mayor's like, "Sheriff, you got to do something about these big feet." And the sheriff, you cut to the other end of the phone, and there's a Bigfoot on the phone being like, "Oh, man, I take it super seriously. I definitely want to capture these big feet."
Oh, Bigfoot. Okay, Bigfoot footprints. Yeah. For a second, I heard that as Bigfoot, comma, Prince, as in the singer-songwriter.
Also, Prince is the Bigfoot.
Oh, really?
Who's the sheriff?
Okay, let's see if we can get him. We'll see. Well, hey, Johnny lives in Minnesota. Let's see if he can land Prince for this movie.
Yeah. So when we show the Bigfoot in its human sheriff form, it's Prince in a purple sheriff's hat.
Awesome. Prince is available, right? We can get him.
This movie sounds pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I really think this movie's going to be hilarious.
It can be a
potential kid.
It can come out. It can be like a back to back release, like the Grindhouse, like the Tarantino Grindhouse. Except we can have this and Triceratops as back to back releases.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that'll be good. I think this will really work out because it's got the previously existent IP. Because people like Bigfoot, they're into conspiracies, and there's an audience for that. So
that's true. True. And people also like dinosaurs, and they also existed at one point, just like Bigfoot.
All right. Any other things that you want to ask me or that I should talk about? Or
unless you want to talk about the Night Train night when you threw the chair.
Okay. So I'm just going to... Just for clarification, the chair throwing Night Train incident has a backstory to it. And it wasn't just that I threw a chair. It is that this party was planned and it was going to be a big deal. And Alex was the one who was like, "We're going to have a Night Train party. It's going to be awesome. Night Train party, this and that." And so before the Night Train party, we went up to the Good Big Liquor Store, which is what you do when you need to buy a lot of Night Train, right? You go to the Good Liquor Store.
Yeah.
And that was right next to Yellow Sub? Planet Sub?
And Yellow Sub in Lawrence.
It was Yellow Sub. And because all the veggie burgers were just gray mush with rice and corn and whatever mixed in, we were like, "We're going to go to the Good Sub shop where they have the tempeh burger or the tempeh sandwich."
Tempeh Reuben.
And so they had a tempeh Reuben and they had a tempeh parm
Yeah, tempeh marinara.
Tempeh marinara. That's what it was. I know it was vegan. It wasn't tempeh parm, but tempeh marinara. So we got, I got one of those, and my plan was to eat it before I went to bed. And like, I was so excited to have my tempeh marinara sandwich, which was like my favorite at the time. Yeah. And so I drank like a bottle of Night Train or Boone's Farm or whatever kind of crud we were drinking for this party. Yeah. And then I got out my sandwich that I had purchased earlier in the day with Alex, and he came running up from behind, grabbed my sandwich, and threw it in the middle of the street.
No.
And I was so upset. And he like giggled like a little schoolgirl and ran off. And
Alex.
I know. And I think that led me to throw the chair or whatever. I think the story is wrong, and the sandwich is actually what landed in front of the cop car, and the cop got out and made a big deal or whatever because of the sandwich. And then somebody said, oh, someone threw a chair in front of the cop car, but it was really just a sandwich the whole time.
No, I was there. I seen the chair land in front of the cop.
Oh, well, I think that maybe you did that.
Yeah, you threw the chair. You were actually the culprit this whole time.
Do you guys want to get on like a porn buddy system where we monitor each other's porn usage? I think it would also be like a great prank thing if I could, like, in the middle of the working day, you guys just get a notice and it's just, you open it up and it's just pictures of buttholes or something. Like, all right. I should probably go to bed because I have to make a time machine tomorrow.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Please don't forget to visit our website, www.prairiepunkpress.com. Visit our socials. Don't forget to look at us on YouTube, watch our videos on YouTube. It's exactly the same as the podcast. But if you could give us a like, that would be great. And if you could rate and review us on our whatever podcast app you use, that would be really helpful as well. And don't forget to spread the word. Tell people about the podcast. And if you can afford to donate or become a patron, you can do that. But if you just want to spread the word, that's fine too. Thanks, everyone.